Okay, we're in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Tes. We're going to review by just saying Pasuk Yud Aleph.
I want to interrupt for just a minute, because yesterday the shiur we had, if you looked at that source sheet.
Which I did.
And it was, those of us who come to this class were able to put
good
sense in here or there.
Excellent, good. Okay, that's good to know. So on page 124. David had a couple spears thrown at his head. Didn't make him feel too good. He ran home, knowing at this point the king had his number, and it was only a matter of time before he would be executed. Hopefully his wife wouldn't also want him executed. That's what Pasuk Yud Aleph tells us. V'yishlach Shaul Melachim al Beis David. That the king sent messengers to David's home. L'shamro, because he ran to his house, and it was nighttime already, so he had guards to, well, guard the house. L'amisu baboker, because he didn't want to kill him at night, drag him outside of his house with his wife there. After all, Michal did love him. So he decided, I'm going to wait until the morning. So I'll just make sure he can't leave the house, and then we'll get him the next morning, we'll kill him. V'tagid l'David, Michal ishto lemor. But Michal, his wife, told her husband, im einecha memalit es nafshecha halayla, if you do not run away right now, at night, macharata mumas, tomorrow, you're a dead man. So Michal knew about this.
Weren't the guards already guarding the house?
They were on the outside of the house, and Michal and David were inside the house.
Right, so she told him
right. Probably. And he would be killed probably instantly. So for him to run out the front door would not be very helpful.
Well, obviously he's not going to run with the guards on.
Right. He would have to find some other way. Now, we're going to see, the next pasuk is going to tell us his the way that he did escape. And perhaps the reason, as we're going to see in the Radak, the reason why the guards didn't watch. Maybe it was a window that he crawled through, which he needed his wife's assistance. It's because they didn't think that Michal would actually turn on her own father, as she's about to. But apparently Michal knew something that David did not. David was just going home. All right, so I had a couple spears thrown in my head. All right, you know, call it a day, I'll go back to work tomorrow. But Michal knew that this was the beginning of the end for him. And that's the reason why he had to run. So we saw that Pasuk last week. We're at the Pasuk Yud Beis. Pasuk Yud Beis tells us again on the bottom of page 124, V'tored Michal as David bi'ad ha-chalom. So there's the chalom, there's the window. That Michal lowered David through the means of ropes, which again, apparently if he would have jumped out of the window, he probably would have went splat, probably. Otherwise they would have been guarding the windows as well. Probably it was on a high Eiffel Tower, you know, where the a princess usually lives, on the highest tower, and
I got the idea from Rachel.
Oh, Rachel, right, that's right, lowering also, exactly. So that's exactly what Michal does. V'yelech v'yivrach v'yimalit. So he went and he ran and he fled. Good morning. So David heeded his wife's advice and he ran away. We look at the Radak. It's a lengthy Radak, but it just basically gives us the answers the question of why on earth there was no one guarding the door. You know, it's like almost cartoon. Someone's guarding this side, and they run out the other way. So Radak explains, Biad Achalon, Ki derech ha-pesach lo yochel latzeis mimnei hashem. He couldn't go out the front door because the guards were there. They would have killed him. There was a window on the other side that the guards would not have been able to see when he was lowered from the window. So the guards were still in the front saying, oh, this is an easy job, I'm not doing anything, this is easy as pie. The guy's inside probably sleeping, and in the meantime he's climbing out of a window making his great escape. And the Medrash Tehillim says, "V'heich Baruch David, How did he run away? So Rabbi Abo over Rabbi Avin, there's a dispute. Rabbi Abo says there's shnei sharem hayu lo lebeis shel David. There was two gates. Echad gadol, echad katan. One was larger than the other. Veshamrosim and hashar gadol. They guarded the larger gate where he would normally walk out of. Veyatzalim and hashar katan. He went through this small little gates, which you can kind of imagine. Maybe he kind of crawled through like a little tunnel to escape. That's another way of looking at it. If you want to make it a little more dramatic, use your imagination. Rabbi Avinayim Yishar Echad Glavad Hayulo. There was only one opening. Vandulhem Al Ashar Maasa Michal Shosh David Biarachalom. Because there was no way he was able to escape through that one door, that's the reason why, as the pasuk seems to indicate, he went through the window. But either way you look at it, whichever way you slice it, he escaped and his wife assisted him. Now, the problem was David perhaps was married by Malchus. He rebelled against the king, which he didn't really do anything wrong at all. But now, his wife certainly rebelled against her own father, which is certainly a capital offense. The daughter of the king should deserve death for assisting someone who deserved to be who apparently was deserved to be executed, and helped him escape. So we're going to see that in a few moments. In the meantime, let's continue with the next pasuk Yud Gimel. Vatikach Michal es hatrafim v'tosem es el amita. So this Michal took terafim, which is translated as a mannequin, v'tosem el amita, she put it in the bed where David would lay, v'es kavir ha'izim some merashosam, and she took some goat hairs, like your shetel, the first shetel in the Torah, took a goat hairs, which perhaps were reddish, which looked like David's, v'tchas b'bogin, and he covered it up with a garment. So, terafim, what exactly are terafim? Sounds like something we've had before.
Yeah, a story we heard before, and there might be significance to it, even if it's translated differently.
Yes.
The fact is both in a way rebuilding against
their father. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think about that. That's true. We're going to see the Radak, which points out Terafim is, we should not translate Terafim as we normally do. Yeah, that's what we usually think of it as when they escaped from the house of Lavan. And Rachel took the Terafim. We'll see that in a moment. In the meantime, let's see Rashi first. And Pasuk Yud Gimel doesn't say that, but it's the first Rashi on the top page 126. Oysin b'demus guf adam. That it was made, the terafim was something which is in the appearance of a person, which is like a mannequin. Right? So it looked like a person. Obviously, it was a cover up.
That would be an idol, in this sense.
It looked because it.
Yeah. Mannequin.
Right, I guess that's the. Right, that's why terafim could be an idol or could be just something else, like a mannequin. Exactly. Okay, the Radak here at greater length tells us. As a terafim, that which is underlined, the heim asuim b'demus haguf adam, just as Rashi said, it's comparable, looks like a person. Mafichok, therefore, some osam b'mita, she placed it by the bed. She dama David sheichiv sham, so it looks like David was sleeping there. So that maybe the guards would poke their heads in every few minutes just to see. And he's like, yeah, it's the same guy still sleeping there. It's an easy job, easy gig. Makam rosho, place of his head. Shama kavir ha'izim shidama kaseir rosh ha'adam. She put these goat hairs, which look just like the hairs of a man's head. Okay, and we jump down a few lines down, which is the first medium-sized line in the Radak. The inyan hatrafim yesh mefarshim kihem avodas gilulim gilulim. That the it's idol worship. It's idols. An idol, kamo ha'terafim asher lavan shenvasim Rachel, because Rachel, as we saw, stole the. It says she stole the terafim, which were idols, and maybe Rachel did that because there were a way for him to be able to figure out where they were going, so he would capture them. So she didn't want him to have that device. You skip down the next line. This is b'chalila chalila, a double chalila. That's a big one. Chalila chalila shahaya beveis David avodas giluli. God forbid we could ever believe that he actually had idols in his house. Certainly David was not an Oyved Avodah Zarah. But perhaps that's the idea, because Avodah Zarah is fashioned in a certain way, and this was also fashioned a certain way, but wasn't an idol. To me, which is the most amusing, is the Mesudah Sion. Look at the Mesudah Sion, which Mesudah Sion sometimes just sticks to giving us a nice translation. This word, that word, Mesudah Sion often gives someone a giggle over here. Atarafim, Heim Osim Mesuras Adam, similar to the Rashi and the Radak, that it is made something which has the appearance of a man, of a man. Mehem l'avodas kochavim, and from them some people use them and fashion them as an idol. Mehem l'tsaras adam yedua. But the way that women make this type of statue is an adam yedua, a man that she knows, someone that she's close with, maybe her spouse, right? And why on earth would a woman do this? Says this to the Sion. Bahanashim hayosas al suras balehen. They would make them look like their husband. With stakil b'taro mirov ha'ava. To stare at their appearance because of the tremendous great love that they have. That they can't...
He goes to war often. He needs to remember him.
They need to remember. Right. So they would actually... She would actually make a statue of what the guy used to look like. That's what it was. Some type of... some type of a picture. But this was more than just a picture. It was a actual... Right.
It was a sculpture.
Sculpture, right. Something along those lines. So that was what... basically, it's the same idea, but the idea of this pasuk is to tell us that not only did she let him escape, but she allowed him, bought him more time, because she gave the impression to everyone that he was actually still sleeping in bed. And
this is
right. So that reminds me of the very end of Skeet from Alcatraz. If you ever saw the movie,
well,
that's what he.
That's what. The HOV lanes, and they put in a. Was just cut out, taken in for that, but a mannequin there.
Right.
So you think that there were more people in the car.
That's an interesting idea. Wow. Okay. That's a good thought. I'm going to try that next time I go to Manhattan.
You'll have to be ready to pay fine.
Okay, Pasuk Yudal. V'yishlach Shaul Malachim Lekachas as David. So came time that Shaul sent the messengers. All right, he slept long enough. I don't care if he's sick. What's the difference? Who cares? He should get healthy. He's going to die anyways. Let's get him out of bed already. V'tomer cholehu. She said, he's sick. Leave him alone already. Why are you being so mean? Let him... get a little bit better before you kill him. Pasuk Tetzvav. V'yishlach Shaul es ha-malachim liros es double lemur. So Shaul was already getting... I think there's something funny going on over here. It's a little suspicious. Yeah, so he sent some messengers to see what's going on with this David character. Ha'alos ha-bamita elai la-hamisa. He said, you know what? Forget it. I don't care that he's sick. Take him out of bed. It's time for him to go. V'yavo ha-malachim. So they went... The messengers went, they banged on the door, she finally let them in, demanded to see David. She said, no, he's sick. And then they pushed through the bedroom door and opened, threw the covers over, and behold, Vihine HaTerafim Elamita. It wasn't him, it was the Terafim. Kvira Izim Arash HaSav, as we said, the appearance of his hair were that of goat hairs. Pasi Gidzai. Shaul's pretty upset. How could my own daughter do such a thing to me? Terrible. V'yomer Shaul Michal, lama kocha rimisini? Why did you trick me in such an embarrassing way? I look like an idiot. How could you have done such a thing? V'tishluches oivi v'imolet. That now my enemy was sent away and he ran away. What am I supposed to do? It's just, you humiliated me. You were Mord B'malchus. You lied to me. You lied to all my messengers, all my soldiers, my guards. You deserve to die. The Tomer Michal Shaul, so Michal turned to her dad and said, you know what? You're blaming me? Blame yourself. Who Omrei Lai? He is the one that said to me, Shalchini Lama Amisech. Send me away. Why should there be death? Which basically, one translation, simple explanation is, you wanted me to marry a brutal murderer. A guy that all he does for a living is kill people on the battlefield. So he knew that he was going to die, and he and I were in a room, and he said, if you do not save my life, I will kill you with my own bare hands. So what am I supposed to do? I mean, I'm supposed to die?
Is that what he was supposed to do? He said, why
would I
kill?
Why should I die? Why should you allow me to die? In fact, we look in the Rashi, Rashi spells that a little bit better. Rashi says, Hu omer elai, ata misartani biyad listin echad. You gave me over to the hands of a listim, like a bandit, a terrible criminal, Shalav charbo elai, he pulled out his sword, put it right up against my tender little throat, and he said, I'm going to kill you, ashalachtiv, until I'm sent away. If you do not send me, if you do not help me, then forget it, I'm going to die, I'm going to kill you. Of course, maybe he was 50 feet down from the ground, and she's lowering him down, maybe she could have accidentally slipped, and why did she continue to allow this, set him in a nice mannequin? Maybe she thought, he'd come back. I don't know. She was scared. So, what do you want from me?
She's just lying to her father. You can't assume that this is what Thug said, though.
She's certainly, right. She is definitely lying. According to this explanation, David certainly did not say this at all. In fact, Michal is the one that told David, go.
Right.
So it wasn't David at all. He was
lied to him first.
Right. That's one explanation. It's also brought down a different approach that if you see the words of this pasuk in pasuk Zion, it ended off that she said, "Hu amar elai." He said to me. Why did she have to say "Hu amar elai"? So the Kehilas Yaakov explains that "Hu" is not referring to David. It's referring to Hashem. That Hashem is the one that told me to do this. Why? Because there is a mitzvah of saving someone's life. There's an idea of Osamad al Damriach. If you see someone dying or someone who's going to be killed, you have to do everything to save them. There's a din of a road day. If a person's chasing after another with a gun, obviously, you have to be careful not to endanger your own life, but if you can somehow save that person's life, you have a Torah obligation to do so. So says the Kehilas Yaakov, that is perhaps what she was alluding to in this pasuk, in what she said to her father. Hu amar elai, Hashem said to me, Shalchini, send, that he should be sent away. Lama amiseich, why should we allow this person to die? You have no right to allow someone to die if you're able to control the situation to save a person's life. It's a different approach. Either way, we continue with the next Pasuk Yud Ches. Pasuk Yud Ches tells us, the David Barach. So in the meantime, David was running as fast as he possibly could. The Amalekites, he fled. The Yavo, so where would be a good hiding place? Probably a place that no one would ever suspect him to go. You go into a cave, you go, in a forest somewhere, no one's ever going to find you. Where did he go? El Shmuel HaRamata. So he went to Shmuel at Ramah. Now Shmuel, of course, was the Navi, name of the book, but also he was the person who was instrumental in having Shaul become the king. And Shmuel and David also had a very strong relationship, as we've seen already. He was anointed already. So probably Shaul, the first place you would look is at Shmuel's house. Just like when you have someone who breaks out of jail, the first thing you do is you check their parents, their girlfriends, and all these things. You check all these different places. That's where they usually run to. It's the most obvious place. It's kind of strange that that's where he would go. We're going to see the reason why he did. V'yagid lo is kol asher asa lo shal. So he was felt pretty bad, so he began to tell Shmuel all of the things that happened in the house of Shaul, that he was almost being killed, they had to run away, otherwise he would be killed. V'yelchu Shmuel, so he and Shmuel got up, v'yeshvu b'Noyos, and they sat in a place called Noyos, which we're going to interpret what that means. So one of the first questions when you hear this pasuk, which is the most one of the more difficult parts, is Shmuel, his last name was Hanavi. He was a prophet.
That's my question.
Why on earth did I have to tell you what happened? You know the future, what's going to happen. You don't even know what happened. So some explained possibly that really Shmuel did know. But very often, like, you have a psychiatrist, right? He knows what you're thinking, but he wants you to express it because it's a way to be able to get your emotions out in the open. So maybe that's the idea, that David was so emotionally charged that Shmuel wanted him to speak, to be able to express himself. To the point that he even didn't even have to give a response because it wasn't necessary for him to do so. He knew what happened. He anticipated this was going to happen. And nonetheless, this was the this is what he did. So, if we look over here at Rashi, Rashi explains, we're going to see a few explanations in a moment. What exactly does this mean that the two of them got up and they went to Benoyos? What does that mean? Where is this place? What is this? So, Rashi tells us, Noyos, is the Targum translation of it, is Beves Ulifana, which means a place of learning, a Beit Midrash. So they went to, like an old pond, right? They went to learn, right? They did a Hebrew crash course, right? I'm not sure if that's, they're learning modern basic Hebrew, but nonetheless, they were learning Torah of some sort. That's what they did. They dedicated all of their energy to learn Torah, which the question again is, we ask, how did they respond? How did they answer? So they were having this problem that he was being pursued by a king who's going to be killed. So all of a sudden you're going to start studying the Bible? How does that help? So perhaps the idea is that would give him some inspiration. Maybe by learning Torah would give them inspiration. Maybe also that would be a way to connect to Hashem, and through that means, that would be another way that they would be able to be, he would be able to be spared. It's brought down that Ba'osa Halayla, that night, I'm reading from the Sefer, that night, Shebarach David, the night that David ran away, Malifnei Sha'ol, Lamad Mishmuel Hanavi, he learned from his teacher Shmuel, Masha'ein Talmud Vasig Lamad B'meh Shana. What a student is unable to accomplish in 100 years, he was able to learn in one single sitting, one single night. It says, David HaMelech, Shibitoch Kol Haradifos, Vetzaros, Sheishlo, Vesakonis Nefashos Mamish, Hu Osik Betor B'chol Kocho. That even though his life was on the line, he was able to learn Torah with all of his energy, and therefore that Torah was more meaningful than 100 years. So it could possibly mean, not that necessarily he accomplished more. If a person studies, you're a bookworm, you read 100 years, it's impossible to read that much in one night, no matter how good your teacher is. But the idea is that learning was more effective, it had a greater impact on him, and a greater schar than all 100 years. That he was able to dedicate, at that moment of his life, that time when he would be focused on his own self-preservation, there he dedicated his time to Torah learning. That learning was greater than any other learning. When I was in Neri Yisrael in high school, my friend and I used to, on Shavuos we stay up all night. So my friend and I decided, when is the best time to learn? So we learned all night. And after you daven, or I guess you daven, whatever you're doing then, it's kind of a blur, then you have a very quick breakfast, and you go to sleep. So my friend and I would learn for the next 2 hours. When every single person in yeshiva were sleeping, we were the only two people that were awake. A huge Beit Midrash, which had hundreds of thousands of people in it, we were the only two in it. Because we said, these 2 hours are going to have a greater impact than all night learning. So that's how I look at this explanation also. With David, learning this one night had the same impact, that so much greater than even 100 years of Torah study. Now the Radak over here gives a different interpretation. If we look at the very, toward the bottom of the Radak, he says, with the words Benoyos, which is about six lines from the bottom, I underlined from Rabotenu Zichron Levracha. If you see the line above that, V'hayazeh HaMakom Makom Livnei HaNeviim. Some interpret that the place that they went, Nevayos, comes from the word Neviim, prophets. This was the place where prophets were. Shayoshin Shambalomdim with Ne Shmuel. Shmuel would teach all these young prophets who were like their his apprentice to teach them how to be a Navi. So he went there for Nevuah. So that makes sense because they didn't know what to do. David is being pursued by Shaul. Shaul's going to kill me. I have a great idea. Let's go to this place and maybe we'll prophesize and we'll be able to understand what exactly we're supposed to do at this point. That makes sense, the word Nevayos. We continue in the Radak. Rabbi Seinu Zichron al-Bracha Amru, based on the Talmud and Zvachim, Ma Inyan Neos Eitzel Rama. Neos could also come from the word Na, something which is something beautiful, something with splendor, majesty. What exactly is so beautiful in that place? El Shahaya Yoshim Birama, they were sitting, they didn't leave, but they were contemplating something which represents beauty, which is the Oskin Binoishal Olam. They're engaged in the most beautiful construction of the world. Kolomer beveis hamikdash. Kolomer beeze makom yeh. Where should we build the beis hamikdash? It's interesting. That is the first. That's what they were thinking about at the time when David was being pursued to be killed. They thought at that moment, "Gee, what should we do? Where should we build the beis hamikdash?"
Distraction that she well might have had for David at that time. He was very agitated.
That what?
That it was a distraction to think about the beis hamikdash.
Oh, it could be. It's a good way to. So this way he's not going to be bothered. He's going to have his mind elsewhere. It's possible. That's a possibility. That's how the Radak explains the idea of this beauty, this beautiful place, the Malkum Beit HaMikdash. So could also, another possible approach is what we said, that it was such an incredible level of learning that they're involved in, that maybe they realized if we can channel this learning right now, maybe that will be enough of a schus to be able to build the base of the Mikdash. That'll be an opportunity to have the temple rebuilt because we're channeling our learning and our emotions to Torah study at this most improbable time of our lives. So that's, either way you look at it, those are the words of the Radak. And on page 127 as well, it brings down this approach. On the bottom left, it says the Talmud relates that Noyoth, to the word noi, beauty, a reference to the holy temple, the most spiritually beautiful place on earth. So either way, that's what they were doing, but Shmuel was with David at this time. Now, continuing in Pasuk Yutes, Pasuk tells us, Vayugad l'Shaul Lamor, was told to Shaul, Hine David benoyos barama. It was like obvious. Everyone knew that that's where he was. So they told Shaul, I know you have this guy David, you want to kill him. He's right over there. He's in this other city with Shmuel.
And the sense that this is a place rather than just looking at a view and dreaming about the
base
from
each
other.
I said it was a place. Benoyos here sounds like it's a specific location in. Right.
And wouldn't you think they would be proactive that even if Benoyos was a place for Nevi'im studying, then they would be there. They would try to figure out what they should do next. Proactive rather than just
right.
Dreaming.
Right. The question is, maybe if that was why they went there, to get a Nevuah to tell me what I should do.
That's right.
So that's a nice explanation that Radak gives, the first explanation. Okay. Pasukha. So go and get him. I mean, go kill him. He's right over there, you know? Big deal. Fayishlach Shaul Malachim. Shaul said, you know, I'm not going to get my hands dirty. After all, he said, I'm not going to kill him myself. So he'll send his messengers to kill him. L'kacha, says David, V'yar, and he saw as Lahakas Hanavim, he saw, as Mesudas Sion says, an assembly of prophets, that they were Nevim, they were prophesizing. Shmuel Omed Nitzav Aleihem. Shmuel was standing next to them. He was the ringleader, prophesizing with all of his young apprentices. But Tehi al Malachi Shaul Ruach Elkim, and it came upon the messengers of Shaul, a godly spirit, v'yisnagu gam hema, and they also started prophesizing. So the guys that were supposed to go and kill David, all of a sudden they start turning around and becoming these lofty prophets. So we look at the Radak, The Radak here says in Pasuk Chav, which I did not underline, but it's the second to last line. Actually, I did underline, but we're going to see from Nevi'im. Targumu Meshavchin. One explanation is that they were praising. Kolomer Hayu Omrim Shirasus Tishbachos L'Kel Baruch HaKadosh. That they were singing Hashem's praises in Ruach HaKodesh. The Efshar, it's possible, Shayim is Navim Nevuos Asidos. Perhaps they were prophesizing future things, Krovos Bizvana, things that were close to happen, things which were going to be happening shortly. Now, what exactly was this prophecy? It doesn't tell us, but it's brought down the Abarbanel, which is also said on page 127, but I'll read it in Hebrew, but it says in English on 127, that the Abarbanel interprets that Kulam Magidim Ha'asid Lios. What does it mean that everyone saw what was going to happen in the future? What was this prophecy? And who cares if you had a prophecy? Kill him afterwards. Why did the messengers not want to kill him? Behu Sheyimloch David Al Kol Yisrael. The prophecy that they had was that David will be the next king. V'shol Yashad Elokim as Shaul Lahamiso. And that Shaul would not be successful in killing him. Because of this, says the Abarbanel, Nimnu Milukacha, says David. That's the reason why the messengers who had this prophecy themselves obviously did not want to kill David. Kilo Rotzu Lishloch Yad B'Mashiach Hashem. Because they did not want to stretch their hand against someone who was anointed who would be the next king of God. V'Lchazer Al Shol, and they didn't return back to the king. Kiyiras Hashem U'masav Davar Shol. Because they now feared God, and they were despised and disgusted by Shaul. So that makes sense. It answers the two questions. They had a nevuah, explains what the prophecy was, and why these messengers no longer wanted to kill David, because they realized Shaul's wrong, and we're not going to kill him. He is the next king. Obviously, we're not going to lay a hand on him. Pasuk Chafal. V'yagidu Shaul v'yishlach molochem acherim. So Shaul was told, I have some bad news. You know those great, powerful warriors that you sent? They became prophets, wimps, yeah, whatever. Right. So they turned on you. So what would Shaul do? Shaul would say, you know what? Maybe I was wrong. Maybe I made a mistake. No. V'yishlach molochem acherim. Try it again. Two times. Right? Maybe the second time, we better luck. V'yisnabu gam hema. Unfortunately, same thing happened. They also began prophesizing. So what did Shaul do? Maybe three times the charm. Right? V'yosef Shaul v'yishlach molochem shlishim. So he sent the third group. And guess what? V'yisnabu gam hema. They also became a whole bunch of prophets.
Does anybody comment on who these people are as Malachim? I mean, when you think of messengers, you don't think of them as any particular status or level, and yet these seem to be on a much higher level than what I might think.
Hashem just put through.
I'm not sure. I mean, I would imagine they're certainly his soldiers. They were out to kill David, you know, so.
But they're not called soldiers, and I just wonder if anybody can read anything about that.
No, I didn't see.
Right. To me, a
right. It could be. It could be like more spiritually, like malachim, like malachim mamash, yeah? Real, maybe like real angels, like more spiritual. But this is I didn't see anything about it. But
it's hard to understand if there was soldiers, as I think of a soldier, that they were certain that they were given this in a sense from a coach, whatever level you want to take at the lowest level.
Right. Right. I mean, also, but part of it may also be the environment. I mean, they walked into an environment where everyone was giving allegiance and showing respect to David. So maybe that also inspired them to realize that he was really a good person. You know, maybe. I don't know. It's a good question. Pasuk Beis. I didn't see anything on it. Vayelach gamhu haramasa. So, Shaul realized that if he keeps sending messengers, he'll have no one left, because they're all turning into wimps. But yelach gam hu haramasa. So you say, you know what? If I want to get something done, I'll do it myself. So he went to Ramat, v'yavo ad bor hagodol. He went to this big pit, which is some location, some geographic location. Everyone knew where he was. Asher baseku. But Yishal, and he asked v'yomer. He said, "Eifu Shmuel v'David." He went on, you know, just ask a taxi driver, ask anyone on the street, do You heard these two guys, Shmuel. Of course, everyone knew him. He was a very powerful man in the city. Shmuel v'David, v'yomer, and this wasn't a politician. This was a knowledgeable man. They answered, Hinei b'noyos baroma. Yeah, he's over there. Everyone knew where Shmuel was. Everyone knew where David was.
He sent all his malachim there, so didn't he know? I mean, he had to ask somebody.
But you would maybe the David would have gotten a little bit wise and started to run at that point. At some point, maybe. But
maybe he knew the general vicinity, but not the specific address.
Right. Could be also. Right. Okay. So, yeah, he's right over there. Go ahead. Go, become a prophet. Why not? Vayelech Sham. He went there. El, page 128. El Noyos Barama. So he went to this exact location. And he had his sword out, probably. He's ready to chop the dude's head off, kill him. Vatehielav Gamhu Ruach Elokim. And what happens to Shaul? He's overtaken with his Ruach Elokim, the spirit. Vayelocholoch Visnabe. And Shaul now becomes a prophet. He begins to prophesy. Adbo Ba'o B'neos Barama. Until.
You said something before, Rabbi. Maybe when they came into the Zliva, the area where all this was happening, they were able to accept this level. And it says in the English that basically, when he decided he couldn't trust the soldiers, when he went out, and he too began to prophesy when he came into that room.
Right.
But you know, the word Rama also means high, doesn't it? On a higher plateau.
Right, that's right. Ramos. Yeah.
Ramos, doesn't
that
mean to fool somebody?
A Rami. That's right. We had that. Michal was. He said, "Why did you trick me?" A Rami.
This is where Shmuel, Kever Shmuel HaNavi, was at the top of Ramot.
Okay. I'll have to go there and prophesy.
What about Bunyas? I never heard of Bunyas, the Benoyos. That's another place.
Well, I mean, it sounds like it's the name of a place, but it also, as we saw, it could mean that's what they were doing in Ramah, or it could mean that's a small area in Ramah, which may mean that's, it could have been like where Shmuel actually lived, Shmuel's home, but that's where they prophesied, and that's what they called his house, possibly. Also, right. V'yemshad gam hu begodav. So, this on the surface sounds a little bit strange, these words. We'll translate them literally, but then we'll have a better understanding, hopefully, of it. So Shaul removed his garments, his nabe gamhu lifnei Shmuel, and he also prophesied in front of the prophet Shmuel. V'yipol arom, and he fell naked, kol hayom ahu v'chol laila, all day and all night. Which means he wasn't wearing the same clothes that he was wearing, he was wearing different clothes. All day and all night. Al kein yomru, therefore, when people speak, they say, you know, Hagam Shaul b'Nevi'im. Also, Shaul was a prophet, right? Which is an expression. Because Shaul, of course, you would think would be the one who would kill. And yet, even you can do it, right? So that's an expression that we would you can use and stretch for all different things.
I don't understand this whole pasuk about taking off his clothes. I mean, there was no other discussion.
Let's see Rashi. Rashi says, on page 128, V'yashid gam hu begodav. Big day malchus, remove the kings of the clothes of royalty. Wilbosh big day the talmidim, and he began to wear clothes like he was a student. Now, on the simple explanation of Rashi, borrowing the words of the Abar Manel, it's a beautiful explanation. The two of them fit beautifully, because the Abar Manel, as we saw, we talked about a moment ago, what was their prophecy? That David would be the new king. So it said that he also prophesied. Apparently, according to the Bar Manel, everyone had the same Nevuah. Everyone had the same prophecy. So it makes sense that immediately after he had Nevuah, this Nave, once he had the prophecy, what did he do? V'yivshad gam hu begadav. He removed his big day malchus, as though to say, right, I realize now that I'm really not the king, and therefore David correctly deserves to be the king. This is the Ruach Elokim. This is the spirit that came about. We look in the Mesudas David. The Mesudas David tells us V'yishat, which is Pashat Bigdi Malchus, similar as Rashi. He removed his priest, his clothes of royalty. L'hadmus l'anavim b'mavushayhem in order to look like the other prophets in their garments, the ubal yisgo aleihem, not to show any level of haughtiness. Because to become a Navi, to be a prophet, a person has to be an onav. You have to resemble certain levels of humility. And therefore, it was necessary for him to act humble by not wearing the garments that of royalty.
But he doesn't translate it. Suda Stone doesn't translate it as naked. It just translates as min big day mafus, just to take off his kingling.
Right, so when it says he was naked of his big day malchus,
right,
he was still wearing his clothes like every other person.
Radak says something interesting here, because he says that what is a Roman is like he was bushat, he was embarrassed, he was a baishan now, because he realized he was a Roman without any friends. Nobody in the room there was his friend.
Hmm.
So it was like not he was, he was embarrassed. That was his nakedness.
Oh, very good. Very good.
It says here, but
right.
Also him.
Right.
It's not mentioned elsewhere that the others took off their clothes.
That's true. And according to the words of Rashi, it's also difficult. It was Big Day Malchus. Who else was taking off the Big Day Malchus? So.
But that's the question. Was anybody else beside him wearing Big Day Malchus?
Yeah, but why
is the point here?
What?
It says,
Gam Hu. Like also.
Right. Because it says
maybe
that
they
same language.
The soldiers' garments of big men were soldiers.
Could be that they all wore just simple clothing. He wore took off big dimal because they took off other big garments. Okay, we finished the parak. Have a very good day.
Does that mean we have